Hola amigos, welcome to the Rob Aguilar Show here on Radio Free Brooklyn. We have a very fun-filled evening lined up for you tonight. But before we get started, I'd like to tell you about a very important sponsor I'd like for you to check out. They are Roan Jewelry. That's ROANJewelry.com. And with Valentine's Day right around the corner, if there's a special woman in your life that you'd like to get a gift for, Roan Jewelry is the place to go. So make sure you check them out. Also, there is an event that I'm going to be attending. It's going to take place January 20th. And I'd like to invite you, if you're around in New York City, stop by. It's my buddy, Yoan Grillo. He is an author, a journalist, a writer, a TV producer based in Mexico City. And for the last 15 years, he's been covering the crime scene, the drug cartels, and he's got a great book out called Gangster Warlords, Drug Dollars, Killing Fields, and the New Politics of Latin America. And this event is taking place January 20th at the Mid-Manhattan Library at 455 Fifth Avenue here in New York, New York. I'm going to be there. We're going to start around 6:30. So stop by, say hello, hang out. We'll take a couple of selfies and get to learn more about this interesting book and the politics and the crime scene and all that crazy stuff taking place down in Latin America. Now, if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can shoot me an email at robaguilarshow@gmail.com. That's A-G-U-I-L-A-R. If you have any comments, any suggestions, any topics you'd like for us to cover, or if you want to be a guest or a co-host on the show, send me an email. We can definitely make it work. Joining us this evening, we have former porn star Dave Pounder. He has a new book out titled Obscene Thoughts, A Pornographer's Perspective on Sex, Love, and Dating. And that book is also available at Amazon. We're going to have links to where you can purchase the book on the website. That's www.robaguilarshow.com. Dave has a very interesting take on relationships. He feels that women should not take it personal when their husbands have a fling outside of the relationship. So take a moment to take that in. Okay, so he says that research shows that men simply cannot be monogamous, that there's no culture or society that exists on earth where men are monogamous. So this is definitely a conversation you don't want to miss.
From A1 Studios in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, New York, this is the Rob Aguilar Show.
Dave, welcome. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. This is a conversation I've been looking forward to for some time now. First of all, you have acted in, what, over 100 adult films?
Yeah, over like 500 scenes, but it's all different.
Wow.
You could do like five scenes and they're all in one movie, you know, or you could do one scene and it ends up in 20 movies because they do like a recompilation, you know, like you'll do a scene with like a blonde hair girl at the beach and then it'll be in that initial movie. Then there'll be like a blonde compilation and an outdoor compilation and a beach compilation and a bikini compilation. So the same scene ends up in like five different movies. But so they usually kind of gauge it by how many scenes you've done. And I've done over 500 scenes while I was in the business.
How did you get in the business?
Well, I was dating this girl and she was really cool and got me a subscription to Hustler magazine for my birthday. And in there was an article about a local swing club, like a swingers club that I didn't even know what a swingers club was at the time. I was like 20. I was, you know, young 20s. And it was literally in the city that was adjacent to where I was living. It was in Costa Mesa and I was living in Irvine, California. I'm like, this can't be real. So I kind of saved the article to check it out. And then one day I went over there and I checked it out. And sure enough, it was legit. And, eventually I met this guy, Maurice, who was a scout, basically looking for talent. And he saw me hooking up with this guy's wife on the couch. I really didn't care, you know, that I was being watched or whatever. And I guess that's what they look for, people that can have sex publicly, so to speak, without having, you know, wood issues, as they say, or you know, that they didn't want people who were shy, obviously, for the adult film industry. And the guy was like, hey, have you ever thought about being in the movie? And I'm like, sign me up. So they signed me up really just to be an extra at first. I was just playing a husband in a series called Screw My Wife, Please, like number 12. You know how porn is. It's like they keep adding a number to the title. And I played the husband. And when I was there, like the porn girl who was playing my wife, who I was going to watch have sex with this other, like a real porn guy, she was into me and wanted to have sex with me. And she asked the director, can I have sex with this guy? And the director looks at me and says, are you tested? I'm like, what do you mean am I tested? Like, I went to my doctor like 6 months ago. But, you know, in porn, you have to go every 30 days. I think it's every 2 weeks now. But, like, back when I was in, it was every 30 days. And I didn't have a current porn test, which is like a more sensitive test for the different types of diseases and stuff. So since I didn't have that, I didn't get the opportunity to have sex with this beautiful girl who wanted to have sex with me. I'm like, well, this sucks. So I kind of networked around set, got everybody's phone number, started talking to everybody. And when I got home, I pretended that this company wanted to use me in like a real sex role. Right. I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy told me to call and I guess he wants to use me, but I have to get tested and I have to call you or something. Like, I just made it up. And then the guy's like, yeah, come on down. And then I went in there and I got in his little talent book, and then producers started calling. And then I got my first shoot and everything kind of went from there.
Do you remember that first shoot? Were you nervous? Did you care? Or
yeah.
Like,
well, you know, it's funny. The first like sex shoot, because this was like a non-sex shoot. I was just playing the husband initially, which is why this guy was kind of scouting at swingers clubs looking for real couples, you know. But when I did my first real shoot, I wasn't nervous at all about getting an erection because I never had a problem in personal life, like even in swingers clubs or whatever, getting an erection. My concern was being able to go for the duration of the film, to be able to go 50 minutes, you know, without stopping and climaxing. And I didn't know about editors. You know, I didn't know that you could just stop and they could cut it all together. Like, I didn't know this. So when I asked the director before the shoot, I'm like, what if I'm going to come? He's like, just say cut or break or take a rest. I'm thinking, yeah, like I'm going to hold up everybody, the location, the girl, the directors, the camera guys, because I have to break. I'm thinking they're never going to use me again. Like I can't break. Right. So I thought, well, maybe if I take care of myself, you know, before the shoot, before we start, then I'll be able to go longer because I'll be able to go longer on round two than I would on round one. So I told the director to give me like a 5 minute warning, like a heads up when we were shooting. And then I ran into the bathroom and I rubbed one out. And then I told the girl, I'm like, all right, we're good. Because she could tell I was nervous about, like, not the scene, but just not being able to go as long and, you know, coming too soon. And I showed her, like, my little undies. I'm like, look, I rubbed one off. And she looked at me crazy. She's like, what are you nuts? She's like, you better get hard. I'm like, of course I get hard. And then when the scene started, when they throw, like, 5,000 watts of light on you and you got all these people standing around just staring at you, of course I had no wood whatsoever. So I totally failed on the first shoot. But what happens is whenever they try a new guy out, they usually put him in what's called a boy-boy-girl scene. It's all straight stuff, but it's two guys and a girl. So what happens is, like in my case, where I didn't have an erection, they shot the other guy hardcore on the girl. So like maybe she's giving him a blowjob. And it looks like I'm having sex with her from behind, even though I'm completely limp. And then they'll switch where he'll have sex with her, and they'll be hardcore on his penetration. And it'll look like she's giving me a blowjob from the other angle, but you can't see me because I'm soft. But it looks like I'm hard. You just can't see it from the camera angle. So anybody who watches that first shoot, it's called Kelly the Co-Ed number 13, I think, with Violet Blue, you'll have no idea that I was never hard the entire shoot. It looks like I was. It's just that all the hardcore shots were on the other guy. So then, you know, but then after that, I learned, okay, don't take care of yourself before the shoot. It's like anything else. You kind of practice makes perfect. And after like 6 months, I was mostly consistent. And after a year, I was, you know, 85% consistent. And then after a few years, I was like 99% consistent. And that's when you're shooting for all the big companies. And
so you get better as you go along.
Absolutely. It's like anything else. Throw you into anything. And if I throw you on a surfboard and say, go for it, you're going to fall off. You're going to try to figure out how to stand up. You're going to ask for advice. And, you know, the more you surf, the better you're going to get at it. You're going to figure out what to eat, what time to go, what's the best waves. Like, you know, you just kind of know yourself. I haven't done a scene in forever, but like if I were still in the business at that time, I would have had no problem whatsoever. Like, I just know myself so well now. I know exactly what I need to do to get hard, how to delay orgasm. Like, it just, you know, you learn it with time for what works for you. And that's what happens. So you see a lot of the same guys in porn over and over again, because those are guys that are reliable and able to perform. And it takes some time to figure out how to do that. So you start off shooting for the smaller producers, and then ultimately you start working for the bigger people like Vivid and Hustler, and big companies will use guys that are well established. You know, they pay you a higher rate too because you're a better performer, you know?
It's kind of cool that I guess they're kind of patient to your development. That first shoot didn't go so well. It's not like, oh, he sucks, get him out of here, give me someone else.
No, that's exactly what they do. They say he sucks, get him out of here. But the thing is, okay, so many different producers that you learn. But the thing is like when you start, you're working for the smaller company. So it's not like, you know, when you work for a big company like Vivid or Hustler, you know, they're shooting the whole movie in a day. Like, they can't have the guy not perform. They can't wait. They need everything to stay on schedule. But when you're shooting for, like, a small-time producer, it's an internet company, I mean, that scene is the scene for the whole day. It's like, you know, you can call them up and go, hey, can we start an hour later? Oh, sure, no problem. You know, you're done eating. Let's all go to dinner. Like, it's like a, it's like more of like a friendship family thing. It's cool. You know, like, it's not like work. So those people, you know, but they pay a lower rate. You know, when you're a guy starting out, I mean, like, I did my first scene for free just to have the opportunity, you know. And then, you know, you'll start $50 and $100 and then $200, you know, and then, you know, a real performance will make between, say, $400 and $600 a shoot, working for a big company, you know. But when you're starting off, the guys who are paying $150 or $200, you know, the established guys aren't going to work for that. They're like, it's not worth their time. They're just like, you know what, forget it. I'd rather take the day off or wait for a bigger company to call that'll pay more money. So, you know, a lot of these, smaller producers, they don't mind waiting. If you can't get hard right away, they'll leave the room, leave you alone with the girl for a while. You know, so you can kind of hone your craft, you know, that way. And those are also newer producers that are getting started. They have smaller budgets, you know, so they can be patient as well. So for every new performer, there's also a new producer that's trying to learn the ropes and, you know, shooting more as they go. And as that producer becomes more successful in distributing their product or shooting what they want, then they can say, okay, now I need better quality talent or higher quality talent that can perform at this level. You know, I mean, think about like getting into porn is like high school football, right? Like, you don't have to be that great. It's not like if you drop a pass, it's the end of your career, right? But if you're a professional football and you drop a pass that could have been a game-winning pass, that could potentially end your career. But they don't just hire you right from high school into college, you know, or into pro. You know, when you're like a sophomore, you go to high school, then you go to college, then you go to pro. You know, then you're still not the first string quarterback. You know, you're like third string quarterback, like. It's this developmental process that by the time you get to, you know, be the first string quarterback for the 49ers, that you've already been playing football for, you know, 15 years. But when you come on as a freshman to your high school football team, it doesn't matter if you can barely run because you're just learning how to play the game, you know?
That's a really good analogy. Salary-wise, like, it's understood that the women will make more than the guys, but can a guy make a living and not have to do anything else and then just dedicate themselves to doing porn?
Absolutely. Well, not so much anymore, because now there's so much free and pirated content that it drove most of the producers out of business. It just wasn't worth it. I mean, you know, you spend all this money making a movie and then people steal it off your site and give it to everybody for free, or they pirate it, that it's more difficult. But back in the day, before 2008, before all these tube and torrent sites came out, as a guy, you could definitely do it. I mean, because if, you know, guys work a lot more than girls. I mean, if you're a girl, you make about twice what the guy makes. So if the guy's making $600, the girl's making $1,200. If the guy's making $300, the girl's making $600, right? And it's really a function of how large the producer is and what the budget is. You know, but it's, I mean, like, if you're a guy, you can work every single day for many, many, many years, because your rate keeps going up because you become more and more reliable. So you start off maybe making $200 a scene, but then you're going up to $600 a scene when you're really, really good. Now, if you're a girl, you know, you're brand new, that's when you're the most valuable. So you come in making like $1,500 a scene as the new girl, you know, and then once you've been around and everybody's shot you, it's like your value's not as good as it was. So then your value kind of comes down. And most producers, they don't want to shoot the same girl over and over again for a site. It's all about the new girl. It's about the variety, because it caters – porn caters to the male evolved sexual psychology for variety. But, you know, the guys watching porn don't care to see another guy every time. And even the women who watch porn, even though they're only about 30% of the market, you know, they don't really care to see a different guy every time. They kind of find a guy they like. Oh, I like Joe. You know, they want to see Joe do the scene. So either way, both genders kind of are partial to the same guy, you know, recurring in the movie. So a guy could be in porn for many, 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 many years. For girls, it's more difficult unless she keeps upping what she's doing. There's a girl who comes in and says, I only do softcore. So she's doing softcore stuff until she runs out of softcore producers. Then she can go back and work at Starbucks and make $8 an hour. Or she can say, okay, now I'll do boy-girl. Maybe she'll just do blowjobs. And then she'll run out of blowjob producers. So then she'll just do regular boy-girl. Then she'll run out of boy-girl producers. So she'll have to do boy-boy-girl, you know, two guys, right? Then she'll do anal. Then she'll do interracial. Then she'll do, you know, all these things that she wouldn't have done initially, she allows herself to do, because as she steps up, as she goes from solo to girl-girl, from girl-girl to blowjob, from blowjob to boy-girl, from boy-girl to boy-boy-girl, to interracial to anal, you know, every time she does something, she gets a higher rate. So, and it makes it more difficult to go back to the regular, you know, minimum wage job that a comparable person of age and education would get. I mean, if you're a high school educated or high school dropout person, I mean, you're not going to be making more than $10 an hour, you know, in the market, right? So if you can do porn and make $1,000 in a day, a lot of girls are accustomed to that. I mean, usually when they come in just doing softcore, they're making like $100, $200, you know, because it's just softcore stuff, but it's more than they would have made at Starbucks. So they're like, well, I don't want to go to Starbucks. I like the $200. So then they start doing blowjobs. Now they're making $300. And then they're like, now it's even harder to go back. So then they start doing boy-girl. Now they're making $600, you know. And then it's even harder to go back because the rate keeps going up. By the time they're doing interracial anal gangbangs, they're making $2,000. And they're like, I can't go back to $10 an hour when I'm making $2,000 in a day. So a lot of it is kind of planning out, you know, their career, what kind of works. And I just wish more women saved money because they can make – they can make a sizable amount of money. You know, they can make $1 million easily, but they blow it all. You know, most girls will do a shoot. You know, they'll make, say, $1,200, and then they'll leave and they'll go to the mall that same night and buy shoes and a fancy car and, you know, just blow it all. Like, they don't have a desire to save their money, most of them.
And you hear a lot about that. For example, if they're smart, like you said, and they plan it out, they could probably put some money away and retire and not have to worry about income. But right. In some instances, you hear stories about women who were in the porn industry who end up really bad with nothing to show for when it's all said and done. And it's interesting because the way you speak, but people listening to this might say, he doesn't sound like someone who would be in porn. You sound obviously very educated. I mean, your academic background is extensive and you have a book that we're going to talk about in a little bit. You're not what people typically think a porn actor would be like.
Yeah, well, listen, Kofi Annan was the head of the UN for a while, and he started off as a clerk. He was just a clerk at the UN, right? He kind of moved his way up, right? So What I think is funny is when people talk about Kofi Annan, they don't go, oh, you don't strike me as a clerk. You know what I mean? Like, when he's the CEO. So, like, a lot of people, like, yeah, I came in initially just doing porn because it was fun. And then I realized, wow, I can make more money as a director. I can make more money as a producer. I can make money consulting and kind of just expand it into that business. But, you know, porn is an industry. It's like saying I wouldn't expect someone from the food industry to be so articulate. It's like, well, why not? I mean, like the food industry is no different from the porn industry. They all have distribution channels and marketing and, you know, product development and all these different things that are happening. They need a web presence and, you know, graphic artists and content developers. So there's really no difference. I mean, like if porn, if any industry, let's just use porn, which is full of idiots, I mean, the content would never make it to the computer for you to watch because they wouldn't have figured out how to get it on a server. You know what I mean? Or they wouldn't have figured out how to accept credit card payments, like, right. Like, 'cause they're so stupid, you know? But the thing is, you know, a lot of people, imagine that you're doing an interview with the guy who's the CEO of McDonald's and you say, wow, you know, I'm surprised that someone who works at McDonald's is so articulate and smart. It's like, yeah, but it's the CEO of McDonald's. It's not the guy that's at the cash register, right? So, yeah, if you pull a random porn performer, you know, that's only doing that, that's relatively new, I mean, you're probably going to find, generally speaking, statistically speaking, what you would expect to find or what you were describing, much in the same way that if you pull the fast food worker at random or if you pull really anybody that's in a job that doesn't require a high level of education, you're going to find that, right? But if you're going to run any company, whether it's a porn company or a food company or, you know, a audio book company or whatever you're going to do, that person, if they're able to successfully run a company, is clearly going to be educated and driven and be able to articulate whatever they need to have done. Otherwise, they wouldn't be successful in whatever space they're operating within.
Most guys would say that you had a dream job. I mean, you're getting to bang all these beautiful chicks. But was it ever not fun? Were you like, this is getting boring?
Well, here? I mean, you know, the joke is like, after being in porn for so long, anything, there was a movie, a quote in Shawshank Redemption, where they were like, you know, show me any hot girl and I'll show you a guy who's tired of doing her, right? It's kind of like, you know, once you're in porn for many years, it does become work, but the joke we used to say is, well, it sure beats anything else, right? Like all work is going to become monotonous, so to speak. But if I'm going to be monotonous, I'd rather be monotonously having sex with attractive women than monotonously, you know, working on an auto assembly line and putting in the audio buttons on the radio for the last, you know, 15 years. But, you know, there are certain days where you're done and everything's great. Like, wow, that girl was awesome. Like, you just had a good day. And other days you're just like, oh, I was not attracted to that girl. Or maybe you were, but you just weren't, you know, for whatever reason, you were having performance issues or you just didn't like the set or, you know, you had a long traffic to get there because you usually talk in Los Angeles. But no, I can't. Listen, I can't complain. My life has been awesome. I'm a happy guy. Like, I can't complain. And I think part of that is because I saved my money and never did anything on film that I wouldn't do in personal life. You know, I didn't compromise any personal boundaries, so to speak. So I can't complain, man. Things are great.
Was there ever girls that were difficult to work with no matter what you did?
Yeah, one time there was – I mean, listen, there's a lot of girls – most of the girls are there for the money, overwhelmingly. 99% of the girls are there for the money, and some of them are there for the money and have a good attitude, and some of them are there for the money and have a crappy attitude. One time there was this girl who was, like, pregnant, and I'm like, okay. So she's like, oh, I'm pregnant, and, like, she had, like, zero animation to her. She was just, like dead. I was just like, dude, this girl is so boring. Even the director's like, oh, can you, like, smile, you know? And, I mean, obviously she didn't last long in the business, but, like – I mean, that's no fun. But as a performer, you know, your job is to be able to self-stimulate to erection, maintain an erection, and then climax on command. You have to be a good male performer, you have to be able to do everything without the girl. If the girl was just not there, and you know what I mean? Like, you have to be able – you can't go, oh, can you help me, honey? Can you give me a blow? It's like, you can't do that. Like, most girls are happy to oblige if that's the case because they want to get the scene done and they want to have good chemistry with their partner. Other girls, they don't want to be there. They're just there because they need the paycheck, and it's up to the guy to be able to – self-stimulate to erection and to be able to focus and get to a special place in his head where it worked. Now,
do you ever feel that you have to defend porn when you tell them a little bit about your background and that you acted and you did all these things in porn, that they treat you differently? Is it something that you have to defend or
care? I don't defend anything. I'm happy to. Like, I mean, listen, I love having conversations about porn and sex and just anything that I think is unnecessarily sort of a social taboo, but I think people are moving away from that. I mean, kids today and parents and everybody they're filming themselves having sex, they're throwing it up on the internet, they're Snapchatting naked pictures. I mean, nobody cares. It's great. You're going to start seeing that this is, you know, sexual variety and sexual openness is nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, you go to any psychologist if you're 30 years old and you say, I've never had sex, the psychologist will say there's something wrong with you. You know,
you're weird.
You're strange. Who has, you know? You can make all the religious arguments you want. There's something wrong with you, right? And if you say, hey, I'm 30 years old and I've never murdered anybody, then there's nothing wrong with you. It's not normal to murder, but it's normal to have sex. You know, so this idea that you shouldn't have sex, I think, is erroneous. You know, so no, I mean, listen, I talk to everything's different. If I tell people I'm a meat eater, which I am, I mean, I might piss off a couple of vegans or some PETA members, and I'm happy to have a conversation with them, you know, or other people don't care. I mean, you know, I like conversations. So if people want to talk, I'm happy to talk, you know, and I'm a big proponent of porn and a proponent of sex and a proponent of, you know, healthy relationships that I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Let's get into relationships and all that. Your book, Obscene Thought, A Pornographer's Perspective on Sex, Love, and Dating. You have interesting views on how relationships, marriages can be successful, can be happy. You believe that women shouldn't be upset if their husbands have a fling.
They shouldn't take it personally. I mean, the thing is guys are always going to cheat. I mean, guys have been unfaithful for millennia. I mean, as far as we know, I mean, prostitution is like the age-old profession, and it's not the women that are hiring the men. It's the men that are hiring the women. I mean, guys are going to cheat. That's how we're wired. So the thing is, I mean, if you care, assuming a woman hasn't been sexually or emotionally abused, that would cause her to act out differently for different types, for either catharsis or self-esteem issues. Assuming she's just a girl who has been brought up without any kind of emotional or sexual abuse, right? And she meets a guy and she loves the guy and she's dating the guy or whatever. She's not going to cheat on him, you know, unless he's doing something that's lacking. He's not investing in her financially. He's not investing in her physically, he's not investing in her emotionally. But if he's doing those things, if he's buying her little things here and there, and he's telling her how much he loves her, and he's having sex with her, and all these things, and she's happy, and she respects him, she's not going to cheat just for the variety of cheating. She'll only cheat if there's something wrong. Where guys, we cheat just because the opportunity arises, and we know that there's no risk of us getting caught. So the thing is when the woman discovers that the guy cheats, she's like, she takes it personally. Like, what did I do? Was I not enough? You know, why did you have to go outside the relationship? But that's because that's how she perceives it. That's how she looks at it. That would make her cheat. Guys, I mean, like, if I ask you to name me, you know, like, let's try this. Name me, like, five celebrities as quick as you can. Politicians, people that everybody knows that have cheated. Give me like five people as fast as you can.
Bill Clinton.
Faster.
John Edwards.
Going faster.
Newt Gingrich.
Okay, keep going. Give me two more. Let's just go with the three. All right, so you pick three.
Okay.
What do all three have in common?
I would say that they're powerful. I guess they're men of power. They're public figures.
They're men. They're all men, right? Where's Condoleezza Rice? Where's Hillary Clinton? Where's Madeleine Albright? Where's Carly Fiorina, the head of HP or whatever, who's running for president? You don't see it because women don't desire variety. You're not going to catch Carly Fiorina in the bathroom with a 20-year-old guy. It's just not going to happen. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if during this election process – it's funny because Larry Flynt always does this million-dollar prize every election cycle for to bring out hypocrisy, like, you know, find the anti-gay politician who's really gay, you know, stuff like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if one of these conservative men, whether it's Ted Cruz of Texas or Scott Walker of Wisconsin – I mean, I think we all assume Donald Trump is unfaithful, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if these even John Edwards is Mr. Family Values Morality guy, you know, and he was off cheating, like, you know, but I mean, come on, there's so many women in the public sphere, you know, that could be cheating, and they're not, it's a gender thing. It's not about, you know, Bill Clinton's just this horny guy and Joe isn't, you know, or oh, well, you know, Madeleine Albright, she's just not that horny and there's some other girl that is, you know, like, clearly it's not the case. It's gender-based. And there's a lot of evolutionary explanations for that, which I go into in the book. And you can even do your own experiment. I mean, if you go to, like, Craigslist, right? Craigslist has a casual encounter section for casual sex, right? And they also have a roommate section for finding rooms to rent, right? If you go to Craigslist and put a rooms for rent ad and you say, hey, you know, I have a room for rent, and I'm looking, you know, for a roommate, you're going to get equal. And let's say you leave it gender neutral, right? That you're not a guy or a girl. You're going to get an equal response of guys and girls that are basically looking for a room to rent because men and women have equal needs to rent rooms or have living space, right? Or if you're trying to sell something, maybe you're trying to sell something that's gender neutral. Maybe you're trying to sell a table, like a table, right? Like go to Craigslist and say, I'm selling a table, you know, it's a wood oak table, 36 inches round and four chairs. Call Jennifer or, you know, call Mark, right? Two different ads. You're going to get the same amount of responses from both men and women because they both have the need for a table. Now, when you go to casual sex ads and you say, hey, you know, my husband's out of town for the weekend. I'm looking for a little fling. You know, send me your phone number and a picture so I know that you're legitimate. Otherwise, I won't respond. And you describe yourself as what's considered attractive by social standards for women. So you'd say that you're, you know, you're young and you're thin, and you have, you know, 0.7, you know, you wouldn't say I have a 0.7, right? But I'm a size 3 with size C boobs or something. Okay. And then you post the same comparable ad for a man. You say, I'm Joe, my wife's out of town. I'm looking for a fling. And then the things that women find socially attractive. I'm an attorney. I'm well-educated. I'm 6'3". Make them young. You know, I'm 25, you know, whatever. If you come back to those email accounts 24 hours later, you're going to find hundreds of legitimate male emails trying to hook up with the wife with a phone number and a photo. And you'll find less than five in the other ones. So how do you go from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails to five, right? And of the five, the women that have responded are not attracted by social standards. They're either very overweight or they're old. And that's probably one or two of the five. And the other three are going to be like spam emails. Like, hey, I'm very interested. Go to this website and put in your credit card info, you know, so I know you're legitimate because you have to be 18 to have a credit card. You know, it's a phishing scam, which you're not going to find in the wife's email account, in the other account that you made. And even when Ashley Madison's data came out, they found that there was like somewhere between 10 and 15 million male accounts and 12,000 female accounts, right?
Well, exactly. I was just going to say that. It's nuts.
And of the 5,000, 90% were fake. They were fake profiles. So if you're knocking out 90, I mean, you're keeping 10% of 5,000. That means there's 500 legitimate women on the entire site with 15 million men, 10 to 15 million. And you know, these were fake profiles. They were talking about how they were automated bots that were responding just to try to get people to sign up and all this kind of stuff. You know, and they said that there was actually not – there's only three zip codes in the United States that didn't have a registered Ashley Madison user. Three. And the zip codes were all populations that were under 500, like something in like Wyoming, like population 39. So this idea that, you know, they're monogamous men is basically BS. I mean, there are guys who are monogamous, but they're not monogamous by choice. They're guys who are short. You know, maybe they live with their parents. They have no social status. I mean, they don't – imagine a society where women desired variety for the sake of variety like men do. And you go, well, listen, my 90-year-old 400-pound friend Jennifer, she's monogamous. It's like, that's because nobody wants to have sex with the 400-pound 90-year-old woman, right? Like, show me the 25-year-old, you know, cheerleader girl that's monogamous. You're not going to find her in that hypothetical scenario. So this is why men are always, you know, it's like Dave Chappelle says, men don't buy nice cars because they want nice cars. Men buy nice cars because they know women like nice cars, and it helps increase their mate value and getting access, reproductive access to these females. So men are always competing on social status. Women are always competing on physical attributes. When I said about the Craigslist ad, right? And I said the wife was describing herself using attributes that are appealable to men by social standards. Mm-hmm. I'm young, I have size D boobs, I'm a size 3 or size 4, right? They're all physical. It had nothing to do with her occupation. I didn't mention anything about her occupation. I didn't mention anything about her height, right? And when I said the guy, I'm an attorney, I'm 6'3", right? Nothing about – I didn't say I have a 7-inch penis, I have big pecs and a washboard abs. Like, those were absent from the ad because women don't care. I mean – think of it like this. If I have hot girl A and hot girl B, and hot girl B happens to be an attorney, fine, I'll take hot girl B because we can do more stuff together. But make the attorney an average-looking girl and make the hot girl unemployed, most men still go for the hot girl. It's physical. Well, for women, it's the opposite. If you take two guys who are high social status, high income, you know, tall guys, okay, and one of them has six-pack abs and is, you know, has a really nice body, and the other guy just has an average body, of course she's going to choose the six-pack guy because there's nothing else to differentiate against. But if you take the six-pack abs guy that's in great shape, that is unemployed, lives with his mother, and the other guy's average body type, I'm not saying he's fat and gross, but he's like an average body type, and he's an attorney that has his own house and his own nice car and all this, most women will gravitate toward that latter guy because they don't perceive things the way men do. There are clearly gender differences between men and women when it comes to human mating, and they can be explained using evolutionary terms as described in my book.
Now, the future of dating. We get a lot of emails from both men and women. It seems like what you touched on earlier before about porn being widely accepted now. It's not like something that people are embarrassed to say, oh, I don't watch porn. No, people are open about it.
Right.
It's almost like we're living in a porn culture. People are having sex, they record it, they put it online, it doesn't matter, everything's cool, no one's embarrassed, it is what it is. But sometimes we get emails from chicks who say, you know, I went on a couple of dates and it was time to have sex, you know, it's third, fourth date, whatever third date rule that some guys talk about. And he wanted to, let's say, for example, have anal. She goes, you know, it's too soon for that. So some of the women complain that the guys, because they see certain things in porn, they view it as maybe normal. So
there's two points.
What do you think about that?
All right, so 2 points. One, and we'll have to come back to one because there's two. So, and my memory's terrible, so I'm putting it on you to come back. One is how relationships are changing in today's society, how to make them work. So we'll come back to that. The second one is what you're talking about, unrealistic expectations from watching pornography. So you're right that when people watch pornography, guys see anal and group sex and have sex with all their friends and ejaculating on her face. And then they meet their real girlfriend and they say, I want to ejaculate on your face. I want to have anal sex with you. I think you should bring your sister over. We can have a threesome, right? Like all this stuff. I want to have sex with your mom. You know, like all these things are from porn. Now, they're in porn because they appeal to the male sexual psychology for partner variety, low investment sex, et cetera, social dominance, things like that. Now, it's true. Women do have a claim. I mean, they have a rightful claim. Now, here's the thing, though. Men have an equally rightful claim as it appears to mainstream media, okay? When you watch 50 Shades of Grey, it was only an awesome, sexy thing for women because the guy was a billionaire and had a jet. If he was poor, it would have been a Criminal Minds episode. You know what I mean? And the thing is anytime you watch or you read a woman's romance novel or you watch a successful show that women like, the guy is always tall. He's always confident. He always has a high degree of income, resources, and social status. You will never find a romance novel where the guy lives at home with his mother and he's poor and he's short and he's meek, right? So what happens is a lot of these girls watch, you know, I don't even have a TV, but whatever's on TV, you know, they're watching these shows and they see that, oh, here's a guy that's an attorney or a doctor and he's got a Bentley or a BMW and a nice car and a nice house and he still manages to have plenty of family time because he comes home from his work to spend time with his family and they go on vacations. And then what happens is that I say, oh, you know, a lot of my guy friends complain that, you know, they go out with their girlfriends and their girlfriends want to go to a steak dinner or their girlfriends want them to go to Italy. And it's like, where are they getting these ideas from? Well, they're getting the take me to Italy. You know, you should have a nice car. I deserve to go to these fine restaurants from mainstream media, much in the same way that men say, I deserve anal, I deserve to come on your face, I deserve a threesome with your friends, because they watch it from porn. And why are these things in mainstream movies? Why are these things in romance novels? Because they appeal to women. And they're creating products that appeal to women. Pornography appeals to men, primarily. So that's what they're doing. So yes, the girl has a rightful claim that the guy should not try to have anal with her when they first met, if at all, as does the man have a rightful claim that he shouldn't really necessarily be obligated to take a girl to a nice steak dinner when he just met her or invest all this money when he hardly knows her. You know, when a guy knows a girl and is in love with her, then he wants to spend money on her. He wants to invest in her once he knows her. And a woman wants to be sexually available to a guy and wants to please him sexually. And women will usually do whatever the guy wants once they're in love with him. But that's the key point, once they're in love with him. And I think you have this sort of entitlement mentality that men get from watching porn and what women get from reading romance novels or watching chick flicks. And I just think it's a big mess.
Is there any way to clear that mess up? Or
absolutely. What is, yeah, yeah. Well, here's what's a so yeah. It's just communication. Like, the thing is most people don't understand that the gender differences. You know, the problem is most social psychologists come from a platform of what they call tabula rasa or blank slate, that everything is socialized, that men are taught to behave this way because of media and things, and women are taught. And it's bullshit, because when you look at – there was a guy named David Buss and David Schmidt. You know, these guys, they did a cross-cultural research, and they didn't find a single society where men did not prefer sexual variety, you know, for its own sake. And these gender differences that you see here in the U.S. are even in tribal societies – that don't have access to any media, like the Yamamano in Venezuela, or the, I don't even know how to pronounce it, but exclamation point K-U-N-G in Botswana. You know, you see that the women are interested in the higher social status males. The higher social status males are able to copulate with multiple females, and they do. You don't see the opposite. You don't see high social status females taking multiple male partners sexually. You know, so you see these same patterns that are happening. So the best thing to do is to communicate it. I'll talk to a girl today. I mean, I'm dating a girl now, but let's just say I'm single, right? And I would meet a girl, let's just say, on a dating site, like OkCupid or something, and I would talk to her. I'm like, listen, I'll talk to you on the phone, because I get – like, when I'm talking to a girl on the phone, I don't see her. I don't see her boobs, the cleavage shirt she's wearing. I don't see her ass walking around. I don't have cues that arouse me. I'm not being aroused because I'm just talking to her. So I'll talk to her all day long. I'm like, let's talk, because I like to talk. I'm like, tell me about politics, current events, whatever you want to talk about. We talk. And I get her really, really, really comfortable with me. Okay. And she'll be like, we should meet. And I'm like, well, let me tell you why I don't want to meet. I'm like, I don't want to meet because I'm a guy and I'm visual. And when I see you, I'm going to be attracted to you. And I'm going to want to have sex with you. And I know that most women aren't necessarily receptive to having sex right away till they know the guy. So I figure the more we talk, the more comfortable you get to know me on the phone. We can meet whenever you feel like you know me well enough so that if we do meet and you're interested, that we'll have sex. So let me give you an analogy of what happened with the girl I'm dating now. We're having a great relationship now. We met on OkCupid, and we started texting on Kik. She was living in a foreign country. And I'm like, oh, I'm attracted to you. She's attracted to me. You know, she came to town. We talked on the phone. And then I'm like, all right, meet me at Starbucks. And here, this was the premise. Okay, we like each other's pictures. We like chatting. We like each other. We'll meet at Starbucks. We'll have a coffee for like 10, 15 minutes. If you're interested, we'll go back to my place or your place. We'll have sex, knock it out, and then we'll hang out and we'll do stuff. Because I already know that I like you from talking to you and having engaged, you know, made that investment of time. So we meet at Starbucks. I literally have a chocolate milk and a croissant. She has a little coffee. after 15 minutes, I'm like, I'm interested. Are you? She's like, yeah. We jump in cars, go back to my place, have awesome sex, right? And then we hang out. And to this was like 2 months ago. We've been hanging out several times a week. I just spent the night at our house last night. We have a great relationship. We have a great sexual relationship. There's no possessiveness. Everything's great. And it's because I made – if I would have just showed up and tried to bang her, she'd be like, what the hell's wrong with this guy? And if she would have been like, take me out to dinner, I'd be like, F you. I don't even know you. You know what I mean? Like it's just putting it out there saying, listen, I don't have a problem investing in you once I know you. And the girl's saying, I don't have a problem having sex with you once I know you. Because you know, women can indiscriminately take money from guys or dinners. They don't care. And guys can indiscriminately have sex with women. We don't care. But the thing is we all want relationships. But if we can just communicate what works, the guy to say, listen, it's not that I don't want to take you out to dinner. I just don't know you well enough. I don't know that I want to spend $100 on you, find out I don't like you, and spend $100 on the next girl, find out I don't like her, and spend $100 on the next girl. Next thing I know, it's been a week, and I just spent $700 on nobody I like. I'd rather, you know, spend $4 on a cup of coffee and only be out $28 instead of $700 and then find a girl I like and spend more time with her, right? So there's all these different ways to kind of go about it. I mean, there's other times where I've gone on dates with girls and it's like maybe they're not ready to have sex. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, we're already making out. I'll just take care of myself. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to take care of myself while we're making out. And girls at first may think that's a little bit weird. But once I do that and I'm completely – like, and I self-satisfy myself with her, she did nothing. She didn't blow me. She didn't have sex with me. She didn't do anything. I took care of myself. I did that in her company, right? And I got to share a sexual experience in my view with that girl. And now that I just came, she could say, hey, that really turned me on, have sex with me. I can't do it now because I just came. She's got to wait like 45 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, and the thing is then all the sexual energy leaves because I just came and I'm relaxed. She's more comfortable. We're back to what we're doing. And at that point, she's already kind of sexualized the situation that the next time she's like, let's just have sex. Or she'll think like, hey, he got off and I didn't. What the hell, right? Like, so it's like – it's one of these things where as long as women aren't what I call sexually sadistic to the guy – I mean it's one thing if a girl doesn't want to give a blowjob or a girl doesn't want to have sex. She should under no circumstance be obligated to do so. But if you're already kissing the guy, there is zero grounds for saying you can't masturbate. Zero. I mean like she's not doing anything other than what she's already doing. He's not asking her to – take her hand and put it on his penis. He's not asking her to spend money. He's not asking her to get naked. He's saying, listen, let's keep doing exactly what we're doing, which you're already comfortable doing because we're making out. I'm just going to slide my hand down, put some lube on, and rub one out to take care of my itch. And if a girl isn't willing to do that, then, I mean, I think that's just sadistic, and the guy should just, you know, break up with her. Much in the same way that if a girl says, hey, I'm hungry, and the guy's thinking, well, crap, I don't want to pay dinner. She's like, listen, just drop me off here. I'm going to run inside. I'm going to use my own money and get my own food because I'm hungry. And the guy says, no, I'm sorry. I don't want to do that either. She's like, what the hell? What an asshole. Like, why won't this guy let me go spend my own money to get my own food to make myself satiated? You know, what a jerk. He wants me to remain hungry. It's one thing if I don't want to eat, but I shouldn't prevent her from eating, especially if I'm not paying for it, right? So it's things like that, getting around that type of these ridiculous social norms of, oh, you know, this has to happen or that has to happen, and just communicating, you know, girls saying, listen, I want to have sex with you, but how do I know you're going to stick around? I don't want to have sex with you and not hear from you the next day, you know? And maybe a guy will say, okay, well, why don't we do this? Then we'll just make out and I'll rub one out and then you didn't do anything and you'll see that if I'm hanging out with you more that I like you. And if I don't call you again, who cares? Because you never had sex with me anyway. So it's as if you didn't have sex with me, right? There's all these different things that you can do to just communicate. I mean, the key is communication. But one thing that's never going to happen is you're never going to find a monogamous guy, you know, who's willfully monogamous. And the problem is, and I call this the free market economic theory, right? Like, imagine a population with five guys and five girls, okay? And one of the girls is unusually attractive. So all five guys are interested in that girl. So all five guys try to court the girl. Two guys are honest and they say, listen, I'm honest. I'm not interested in monogamy. I'm going to have sex with you because you're the hottest, but I'm also going to have sex with these other girls for variety. The other three guys say, nope, I have no interest in non-monogamy. I want to only be with you. Okay, now the woman, being a woman, responds to those three guys. Okay, so now the two guys who claim non-monogamy are kicked out. So then of those three, she probably picks the guy who has the traits that women desire. He's funny, he's tall, personable, confident, social status, resources. So she picks that guy. Now she's in a relationship with that guy. Meanwhile, because he's the guy that's projecting an illusion of monogamy and has the resources, personality, and social status, the other four girls in the population are also attracted to that guy. He gives one of those other girls the opportunity because he wants the variety. She feels special. He gives her the same BS lines that, oh, I'm just not that happy with her, even though he is, you know, blah, blah, blah. She has sex with him. The primary girl finds out about it, and then she says, and every guy has heard this line, it's not that you cheated, it's that you lied. Well, he had to lie, or he would have never gotten into the relationship with her to begin with. Because the first two guys who didn't lie didn't get into the relationship because she opted for the guy who lied. So, and here's the funny thing. So the thing is if a woman really, really wants a monogamous guy or to minimize the risk of non-monogamy, she needs to date a guy that doesn't have the skill set or the characteristics that attract women. She needs to date a guy who's short. She needs to date a guy who's uneducated. She needs to date a guy with low social status and resources that preferably lives with his parents. But women don't want to do that. They're like, no.
None of them do.
To date the guy who's tall, funny, has a great job and a great car that will only be monogamous to me. And that's like me going to the Mercedes dealership and saying, I don't want to spend $80,000 for this beautiful Mercedes. I want to spend $10,000 like the Kia dealer. It's like, well, if you want to spend $10,000, get a Kia. You know what I mean? It's like, if you want monogamy, date the guy. Well, I don't want to date that guy. I want the Mercedes. Well, if you want the Mercedes, the price you pay is the $80,000. If you want the tall, social status, outgoing, personable, funny guy, the price you pay, whether he admits it to you or not, is that he's not going to be monogamous. Most guys aren't, as you can see by Ashley Madison. And just because guys are on Ashley Madison, most of them obviously aren't successful, but they still have the intent of cheating, whether or not they're able to realize it. And the ones who realize it are the ones that have the social status and personality and all these evolutionary traits that draw in women. But the thing is who cares, right? Like, if I lived in a society where women desired sexual variety like men do, obviously I wouldn't want my girlfriend going off and having sex with everybody. But if all women did, and it was depicted in music and movies and psychology research and everything, I'd say, okay, it's clearly not me. She's going to do what she's going to do. And I just hope I can do what I can do to retain her as my mate. And how do women retain men? I mean, you know, remain looking physically attractive, be sexually available, you know, be nurturing and caring, and just do things that guys like. And for men, it works the same way. Be attentive to your woman's needs. Be a good listener. Communicate well. You know, recognize her value. You know, like, take her out to dinners here and there. You know, remember little things that are important to her. You know, like these aren't bad things. You know, you just have these groups that want to think men and women are the same, and we're not. You know, we're not the same, especially when it comes to reproduction.
So if people understand these different points that you're bringing up, would you say that marriages, relationships would be healthier and happier?
Absolutely. Look, let me give you an example. So this last girl that I'm dating, the one that I was telling you about with the Starbucks encounter, right? Mm-hmm. I have never once said to her, nor has she ever once said to me, so are we monogamous? Are we exclusive? There is no reason to have that conversation. Okay, zero. And now, honestly, in the last 2 months, I don't think I have had sex with another girl. I may have, maybe one. I don't know. But the thing is who cares? Like, I don't – if she tells me it's Friday and she's not available, I'm not like, what are you doing? Who's it with? When are you going to be – I'm just like, all right, well, you know, if your plans change, you want to hang out later, text me. Or maybe we'll do something Saturday. Like nobody in their right mind would say – would meet a girl or guy, whatever, and go out with them and go, so are we exclusive with tennis? Right? Like, we're not going to play tennis with anybody else now. It's like, what? Like, who would say that? Like, there's this false – like people feel the need to claim sexual possessiveness of their partner. They don't do that with dinner, with playing tennis, you know, with talking on the – I'm the only person you're going to talk with on the phone, right? It's like, no. But why have the conversation? Like if two people are happy together – just hang out, do your thing, make it work. There's no need to set any kind of expectation level for sexual exclusivity any more than you would for any other activity. And if you go to like pornographyexpert.com, which is like my bio website, and scroll down to like this talk by Christopher Ryan called Prehistoric Origins of Human Sexuality, you know, it says sex, you know, and I agree with the philosophy there, is sex is social. It's not reproductive. You know, we have sex for social reasons, and reproduction is really a byproduct of that. And there's plenty of evidence. I mean, we have humans have sex about 1,000 times per birth. Most mammals have sex only 12 times per birth. We have sex when reproduction is not even a possible outcome. We have sex when women are pregnant. We have sex when women are postmenopausal. We have sex when women are menstruating. You know, when there's absolutely no reason, you know, we have oral sex, anal sex, like when there's no way for reproduction to occur. So this outdated sort of religious morality of having sex for reproductive reasons is completely bullshit. And we should start looking at chimpanzees, bonobos, and other mammals that share much of our genetics and look to their behavior for understanding sexual behavior, and you'll see that it's primarily social.
What a great conversation, Dave. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, your views, sharing that all that information about the porn industry. And again, the title of the book is Obscene Thoughts, A Pornographer's Perspective on Sex, Love, and Dating. Your websites are?
The website for the documentary is riskybusinessthemovie.com. The website for the book is obscenethoughts.com. And the bio website with academic talks and things like that is pornographyexpert.com.
Dave Pounder, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. I'd love to have you back on and talk more about all this great stuff.
Absolutely. I love to talk, as you can tell. I'll be on it.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks.
Again, Dave Pounder. And the name of the book is Obscene Thoughts, A Pornographer's Perspective on Sex, Love, and Dating. And he's got two websites that I'd like for you to check out. One of them is riskybusinessthemovie.com. And the other is pornographyexpert.com. So if you're interested and want to learn more about the porn industry, what goes on behind the scenes, I think everyone has a lot of different misconceptions about what the industry is like. Check those two websites out. Check out his book. We will have links on our website, www.robaguilarshow.com. There are links and banners there to his book. So you make sure you check it out. I want to remind you also about the event that I will be attending January 20th at the Mid-Manhattan Library. That's 455 Fifth Avenue. We're going to start around 6:30 p.m. My good buddy Yoan Grillo is going to be on hand. He's going to be talking about his latest book, Gangsta Warlords, Drug Dollars, Killing Fields, and the New Politics of Latin America. So you make sure you stop by, say hello. We'll hang out for a little bit. We'll take some selfies and get to know each other. So up next, we have Tripping Beats on Radio Free Brooklyn. So stick around. You do not want to be left out.